Blog Talk Radio.
Guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
You know, it occurs to me, Phil, that our intro tonight kind of gives away, you know, where we stand on our show topic tonight.
I was thinking the same thing. It's like, oh, my spiel totally discounts
one, huh?
Our best days before us or behind us? Well, I don't know, but let me tell you about the future just for a moment before the show begins here.
Spoiler
I should have
alert,
said something else, huh?
Yeah,
we're
right,
transformed.
Yeah.
We're very uncertain about the future, and we're going to work it all out here tonight. So please join us.
Well,
that's what
know,
I meant to
the
say.
Amazing future is before us, or it might be just a big pile of crap. We don't know.
It could be all the good stuff was behind us. I don't know. How would I know? That's what we're going to talk
about.
That's
how we should have done.
Yeah.
How's things going, Phil?
Pretty good. We're on Monday evening this week, and I think we'll be back on Sunday next week. But we're doing a short show this week, and it might be a somewhat abbreviated show next week, just working around some travel schedules and things like that. But you know what I like is we keep getting the shows done. That's what I like. We keep showing up and staying on top of what's happening in the world. How about you? How are things going with you?
Everything's great. Everything's good. I'm just happy when the entire family is well in the middle of the wintertime, and we are. And so, I have no complaints whatsoever. Well, you had a big football game last night.
Oh, yes. The Broncos did win the AFC Championship yesterday, and they're going to the Super Bowl. if anyone missed that, we're happy to give you that. Very happy news. Yeah, that was huge.
Yeah.
Broncos going to the Super Bowl, playing the Carolina Panthers, and let me go on the record saying they'll probably get beaten, okay? Most likely the Broncos will get blown out in the Super Bowl. I say that not out of any lack of loyalty to the Broncos, but as we discussed last time we talked about Broncos playing in the Super Bowl, statistically, that's what usually happens. So that's the expectation I'm going into with. If something else happens, no one will be happier than I will, obviously.
This is Phil's way of saying break away. You know, I mean, this is
exactly.
Saying the negative.
However,
to get it out of the way, and
having said
the
that,
best.
There's some big news related to that earlier today. The Broncos are going to wear their white jerseys in the game. Now, this is significant for a couple of reasons. For one thing, last time they won the Super Bowl, they had on the white jerseys. Okay, they were wearing essentially their away uniforms. Now, technically, they're the home team because it goes back and forth between AFC and NFC. Technically, in San Francisco, they're going to be the home team. But they've elected to wear their away jerseys, their away uniforms, out of deference to the last time they won the Super Bowl and out of respect for the fact that they went 6-2 on the road this year. So their record was actually better wearing the white uniforms than it was wearing the orange ones. So, with something like that going for them, it's really hard to, I know people in Vegas are calculating the odds, but if they're not taking things like that into consideration, they're not getting the whole story.
Yeah, I mean, they need to throw the white jerseys into their calculation, for sure.
Exactly. And as if, life wasn't exciting enough with that, X-Files came back on last night. First episode aired of special six-part X-Files series that Fox is doing. It's on again tonight, and then I guess for 4 weeks after that. And I will reserve comment for now on the new X-Files.
Right.
Did you have a chance to see it?
I have seen both episodes that are played.
Oh, you're way ahead of the game. Okay, so I will only go so far as to say the first episode dealt with the myth arc. The second episode, they said, would be a monster of the week. And the third episode will be one of the comedy episodes. So I'm like, they're trying to cover all their bases. I guess then maybe the next one becomes a, you know, Scully and Mulder relationship one, and then they'll finish it with some kind of surprise musical number or something. I don't know. But they're at least trying to hit all the notes that the fans
hit
are
all
looking
the bases.
For.
And, you know, it was always, you know, it seemed like back in the 90s, it was always a myth episode or a monster of the week. I preferred the myth episodes.
Yes.
And, you know, I think tonight's episode, I don't think I'm giving too much away to say it's monster of the week kind of episode. But it's tied in very closely. I think it manages to do a little of both, Monster of the Week. And so, anyway, that said, without spoiling any further, I recommend both episodes. You need to check them out.
Yeah, we're too early in. We'll give our critical evaluation once the thing has run its course and Gotham returns to Fox. But anyway, I felt like that was worth mentioning. And while we're talking about news, we got some sad news, very sad news. The passing of Marvin Minsky, which was announced today. It was, we were talking before the show. This seems to be a spate of prominent people dying here in the last few weeks. And Marvin Minsky, of course, was the co-founder of the Artificial Intelligence Lab at MIT, one of the, I don't know, seminal thinkers in artificial intelligence over the second half of the 20th century and well into the 21st century. A tremendous talent, a tremendous resource is lost. I don't even know how to describe it. The man was one of the people who helped create the world we live in today, and the world that we're moving into. We were talking before, he was influential with and related to the One Laptop Per Child program, which was founded by Nicholas Negroponte, also there at MIT, and he was also the author of wrote the introduction for Eric Drexler's Engines of Creation. So somebody who contributed in a large way to the kinds of stuff that we talk about in the show. He'll be very much.
He was a professor, I believe, of Ray Kurzweil.
Too.
Yeah, and so he's a just a brilliant, brilliant guy that never stopped working. He was tireless. He just, it's just one of these guys that just loved what he did, and being on the cutting edge for so long. And like you say, it's a big loss. But thankfully, he inspired a lot of people along the way. That he had incredibly big shoes to fill, but he had lots of folks that were coming behind him that he helped inspire. So just a great man. Did many things, and it's going to be his loss will be felt, I'm sure, but grateful that he inspired so many.
Absolutely. Thank you, Marvin Minsky, and farewell. It's as you say, tremendous loss. But we really live in the world he helped create,
That's right.
we're moving into the future that he helped to define for us. And actually, Marvin Minsky is a good kind of representative for our topic this evening. Our topic this evening is, are our best days behind us or before us? And I started on this topic with, I had sent you this link from the New York Times last week. Eduardo Porter talks about how America's best days may be behind it, and he talks about the 20th century. The 20th century figures heavily into why we might be on the decline. I'm just going to read this little section. Here's what he says. He's quoting Robert J. Gordon, who wrote The Rise and Fall of American Growth. Innovation will trundle along. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Dr. Robert Gordon, no relation of which I'm aware. So, yeah,
oh,
go
okay.
ahead. I'm sorry.
Very good. Okay, I'm glad we clarified that. Yes. Stephen's crazy old uncle who writes these things. And
no, not at all.
Nothing like that. Okay. All right. Innovation will trundle along at the same pace of the last 40 years, Professor Gordon predicts. Despite the burst of progress of the Internet era, total factor productivity, which captures innovation's contribution to growth, rose over that period at about one-third the pace of the previous five decades. That's hardly the worst part of the story. The labor force will continue to decline as aging baby boomers leave the workforce and women's labor supply plateaus, and gains in education, an important driver of productivity that expanded sharply in the 20th century, will contribute little. Moreover, the growing concentration of income means that whatever the growth rate, most of the population will barely share in its fruits. Altogether, Professor Gordon argues, the disposable income of the bottom 99% of the population, which has expanded about 2% per year since the late 19th century, will expand over the next few decades at a rate a little above zero. So in short, we're seeing the rise of the first generation in U.S. history who will not be better off than their parents. That's where Eduardo takes it. And, you know, it's even more chilling than that, I think, when you look at this big drop-off, you know, this huge growth in innovation and development that occurred, and then suddenly, according to this analysis, and there, you know, Professor Gordon's not the only one who thinks this. We've, you know, Tyler Cowen, I believe, co-wrote a book with him on this subject. In fact, that might be, it's not the rise and fall. What's the book that Tyler Cowen wrote? Anyway, it's along those same lines, talking about this very phenomenon. And I was thinking about Marvin Minsky. Well, here's a guy who lived through it, right? He lived through that tremendous burst of growth from the, you know, early through the middle part of the 20th century into the late 20th century, into this period of what these guys would describe as stagnation. And of course, he's not here to answer the question. But if he were here, Stephen, do you think that Marvin Minsky would agree with this assessment of our progress and of our prospects going forward?
Absolutely not. You know, let me just take it from, take it based on the innovations that Marvin Minsky was most interested in, and that's artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence coupled with the internet and the ability to instantly communicate with individuals around the world. You know, instant collaboration with everybody. The ability to throw just amazing amount of intellect at any problem means that our innovation, our days of innovating are not behind us. In fact, you know, it may appear from the point of view of somebody looking back on this time that we weren't really innovating until now. You know, that we're at the beginning of what could be called the age of innovation, because quite frankly, when we had geniuses, they were isolated, they worked alone, and they didn't have the ability to share instantly with other people and have feedback and criticism, correct, you know, constructive or otherwise, brought to bear on the on their solution to whatever problem. And so I'm thinking Dr. Minsky would say absolutely not. That's crazy talk. The golden age is in front of us, not behind us.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Obviously, as you said, you know, we kind of spoiled it with my intro where we were going to fall down on this, as if there was any doubt, right, where we were going to fall down on this.
We are the optimistic futurists. We really are.
That's right. But I really think that both Porter and Gordon, not you, Stephen, the other Gordon we're talking about here, fundamentally missed the point, right? Because we are on a massive growth trajectory that they're not looking at, that they're not taking into consideration. And it's the growth, one, of the amount of information that's available to us, and the coincidental growth, or actually the driving growth of our ability to process information. We did do a handoff between having huge growth in industrial progress, manufacturing, engineering, energy, those sectors. Those grew at an unbelievable rate from, you know, mid-19th century to mid-20th century. Nothing like that has ever occurred in the history of the species, and nothing like it will ever occur until a few years from now when we have the singularity. We're actually we're heading for something even bigger, I think. But those two drivers, you know, the amount of information and our ability to process information, as you mentioned, the fact that that infrastructure is connecting us, right, that we're interacting with it, is changing everything, right? You know, we've got things that were the kinds of technologies that these guys are talking about, things like medicine and the production of physical goods and really all labor, right, everything that people do. All of these are now becoming information technologies. That is the awkward growing phase we're going through right now. They're not quite there yet, but they're hurtling towards becoming full, pure information technologies. And once they're there, everything changes. Everything changes in a very radical way. And I think it's easy to get caught up in saying, well, you know, we went from we could only go, you know, as fast as a horse could go to going to the moon in about 100 years. And, you know, the next 100 years has no promise of being able to increase our ability to go fast or to move weight or, you know, whatever, however you want to divvy that formula up nearly as quickly. Well, again, I think if you take the singularity into consideration, you can't absolutely exclude that. But, you know, the other thing is, it's like once you've invented the car, okay, or the TV or the dishwasher, you can't invent them again, right? There's certain developmental optima that you hit, right?
But you know what you do, though? I mean, you do have for the first time. Once the TV is invented, you're right. You can't invent it again. That's happened already. But the world has now televisions, and they're
right.
Connected with each other with these televisions. And then pretty soon you're adding a computer, and that television is really a big computer monitor, and you're interacting with the world in ways that were never possible before. I want to kind of back up for a second, Phil, and give you an example of someone who is just absolutely brilliant beyond comprehension. Archimedes.
Okay. There you go.
And you know, he's ancient Greek mathematician. Lived 287 BC to 212 BC. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say he's the probable inventor of the Antikythera mechanism.
Possibly.
They have learned that the mechanism is older than they thought originally, and it's they're now dating it within a couple of just a few years, so less than a decade of his death.
Making him a prime suspect.
You know, he's,
and we've done shows on this thing before. Look it up. It's the first computer.
Yeah,
it's an ancient computer, is what it was. Yeah,
and he was anticipating modern calculus by doing infinitesimals and the things that he was doing with mathematics, and not just mathematics, but he would apply those mathematics to the real world, that making him one of the first in the world to do that kind of thing. You know, he was said to have set up mirrors in the harbor there at Syracuse, defending his hometown, he was the genius behind this. And they would literally burn the Roman ships with the sunlight out of the harbor because they could put enough heat on the ships to catch them on fire on the water with his mirrors. And
like the original ray gun, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then if they got close enough, he would literally be. He had cranes out there that would literally, using principles of levers, could pull it out of the harbor onto dry land where the soldiers would just attack the ship on the land, actually pulling it out of the harbor.
Wow.
You know, I mean, he's the you know, you know, Tesla, you know, man out of time. Archimedes was a man out of time, but he was, you know, and, you know, and I'm sure he was teaching others and doing all he could, but he was, by and large, it was a small island of intelligence. Okay. I mean, it was,
right.
He was in many ways was alone in the world. You put him to the world by way of something like the internet.
Right.
And you know, the entire world benefits from his knowledge. Oh, and by the way,
Stephen, you know, think about it. Even if they had had reliable means of production, like we got out of the Industrial Revolution, they could have made multiple of those devices, and a lot of that
knowledge all over the ancient world.
Even without the internet, it could have made a huge difference. Yeah.
Well, you know, we would have had the internet by the middle of, you know, what we call the Middle Ages, you know, because
right.
you know, that
right.
was, that would have been a computer that would have launched an early information age, no doubt. But it didn't happen because it was just this island of, you know, of intellect, you know, surrounded by an ocean of ignorance. You know, I mean, just and it was interesting. The general Marcellus, who was attacking Syracuse, and this went on for years, by the way. They kept coming. And finally, they you know, overran the city, and his standing order to his troops, Archimedes must live. We have to capture him alive. Well,
they wanted to get all the info, huh?
Oh yeah, he was considered the most valuable treasure in the city. Well,
right.
the Roman foot soldier that approached Archimedes first ordered him to get up, and Archimedes was in the middle of writing a formula or something, you know, didn't even hear him because he was so absorbed in what he was doing, and was run through by the Roman soldier. And so the world lost Archimedes early as a result, and I'm sure the Roman soldier followed him pretty quickly after that.
No doubt, yeah.
You know, but anyway.
So actually, Stephen, I stand corrected on what I said, because actually once you've invented the car, the TV, the dishwasher, you know, the crane that lifts ships out of the harbor, the ray gun,
right.
the computer
the gun,
even,
yeah.
you do have to reinvent them over
that.
And over again if you don't have a context, right, of keeping the information and building on what's come before, which he didn't have, and people like
right.
Leonardo didn't have, and even Tesla didn't have, but which we have now to
right.
an extent that has never existed before. Okay, so you've set me straight on that. Once you've invented the car, you do have to invent it again. And, in fact, we have invented it again because now we're making the flying car. And, in fact, I don't know, have you seen this video? I guess it went around a few years ago, but I didn't see it the first time. It's a crash test where they run a head-on collision between a 2009 Chevy and a 1959 Chevy. So, you know, two cars from 50 years apart. And they're both just, you know, kind of family cars. Neither one of them is the big deluxe sports car or anything like that. They're just the family sedan type cars, and just to see how the 2009 car, which is lighter and looks flimsier, you know, it doesn't look nearly as substantial as the 1959 car, it just demolishes it, you know. I mean, it just
right.
it just rips
yeah.
it to shreds, because even though we haven't reinvented the car, we've made the car, you know, infinitely more fuel efficient, not infinitely, but incredibly more fuel efficient, incredibly safer, you know, and we're moving it towards increasingly becoming an information technology, of which the, you know, the self-driving side of making cars is, you know, is just one aspect.
And, you know, and also looking at things like making our cars all electric, you know, and you know, we're looking at all ways in which to change even the you know, fundamental things like the fuel that pushes it. So, you know, I think, though, now that the world has, you know, and when I say the world, the entire world, there's cars in the entire world now. Now that we've seen cars, you know, and we've all lived in a world that has the car, you know, even if, you know, the last drop of petroleum is pumped out of the ground, we will have cars. And the
right.
reason, you know, and now that we have them and we know how, you know, what they can do for us, we will find a way to have something that goes down the road and transports us where we want to go. It's a you know, now that we've learned of the possibility, even if some of the things that drive the car presently were to go away, we would adapt and find new ways of doing it. So
yeah, we're not going to have to reinvent it anymore, except just to make what already exists better. That's the way to, you know, have to invent something again, to reinvent and to build on the progress. That's what we're doing. You know, what we're experiencing now is progress, incremental progress built on previous progress, and at the same time, net new stuff happening to an extent that wasn't happening even when all that phenomenal energy and infrastructure growth was taking place in the previous century. I really think we're in a bigger period of change now because, you know, now we're in this process of fundamentally redefining our relationship with the physical universe. You know, I mean, just at the most fundamental level, changing the relationship between humanity and stuff, right? You know, it's human mastery of physical matter. It's on this steep curve of growth, driven by information getting into the system and changing all the rules about it. And I think if you don't take that into consideration, you can come to the kinds of conclusions that that Porter and Gordon do. But you know, I found this piece over on the Washington Post site, and I wish I'd found it in time to link it to the show because this is the perfect answer. The title is "The Many Reasons to Be Excited About America's Future" by Vivek Wadhwa. He's with Stanford University. He's also, I think, with Singularity University, although they don't mention it here. And he essentially lays out a lot of what we were just talking about. And talks about America, but also talks globally about what's happening with more people having access to energy, more people having access to information. And he talks about what happens when, for example, the practice of medicine, you know, becomes this kind of open-sourced, crowdsourced information technology rather than this kind of, you know, walled garden elitist profession. I mean, you know, no time to get into all that. Some aspect of that will have to remain, but it's going to be completely transformed. It's going to be completely changed, as is the production of goods, all the stuff we've talked about so many times before on the show. And I think it's interesting that you can see a headline like this, or the one we talked about a few weeks ago, that, it, you know, 2015 was the best year ever to be a human on the planet, that we can know these things are happening and still come to the conclusion that our best days are behind us. Means that I guess we still got our work to do getting the word out there about this kind of stuff, don't we?
Well, you know what this means, Phil, is that we're going to have to continue this program. For the foreseeable future, you and I just need to keep talking about these things, apparently.
We got to keep talking about it. And you know what? We can't do 30-minute shows because they're over too soon. And what's our music?
and I wasn't even ready to bring it up. I tell you, Phil, my apologies because I was right in the middle of the show. The music tonight's "Maybe I'm in Love" by Zach Linton.
Zach Linton singing "Maybe I'm in Love." Well, thank you for putting that together, Stephen. It's great talking with you as always. Thank you all for being with us. We'll be back on Sunday evening next week with an all-new show. And until next time, live to see it.